Welcome to Real Career Talk. I am your host, Bill Burkett. This is a monthly interview brought to you by the Network National, where we spend about 30 minutes with internal and external experts discussing career hot topics. Those topics include our 2021 talent development pillars, including adaptability, mentoring, sponsorship, advocacy, continuous learning, building relationships even. What? Yes, for you and your career, your organization. I am excited that we have Minda Hartz here. She is the CEO of the Memo LLC. I believe that's it, correct? Yes, and an award-winning and best-selling author of The Memo, What Women of Color Need to Know to Secure a Seat at the Table. Her second book, just recently released, entitled Right Within. She's the professor at NYU Wagner and hosts a live weekly podcast called Secure the Seat. In 2020, Minda was named the number one top voice for equity in the workplace by LinkedIn. She is an Aspen Ideas Festival scholar. Morty, we got to find out about that, yes? And has been featured on MSNBC's Morning Joe, Fast Company, the New York Times, and Time Magazine. Minda frequently speaks at companies like Microsoft, Amazon, Nike, and Bloomberg on topics such as managing diverse teams, courageous leadership, and advancing women of color in the workplace. Good afternoon, Minda.
Hi, Phil. Thank you so much for the wonderful introduction. I love your voice. It was made for this type of work.
I humbly receive that. Thank you. Enough about me. All right. I'm excited. And let's just get settled in and let's have a great session. We got a lot to talk about today, but wonderful accolades. Wow. Kudos to you. I know it's definitely an achievement, not just, you know, print one book, but you've had two. And that's just so awesome. Wonderful accolades. Tell us a little bit about yourself. If there was one thing you wanted your audience to know, the Network National audience to know about you outside of this personal, what would it be?
That's a great question. I am a lover of grits, Phil. not confused with anything other than adding salt to it. So I love grits. My family is from New Orleans, so it's a staple for breakfast. And I collect vintage typewriters, so a lot of people would probably be surprised to know that.
Vintage typewriters, that's phenomenal. I won't even start up a ruckus about the grits. We don't have time to get into grits, Minda, today. But so much more to talk about. You mean really? No rosemary, no garlic, none of that in the grit? Just grits?
Every now and then, just salt and butter. Keep it simple, you know. But grit, a little shrimp every now and then, but never sugar, just to be clear on that.
Got it. She said it, audience, straight from the New Orleans area. No sugar in your grits. All right. So let's get down to business. Lot to share, hopefully. I know we're going to be powerful in this setting. So talking about securing the seat at the table. First of all, Minda, tell our audience, what does that mean?
Yeah, Phil, I know oftentimes people use the analogy of the table, right, and chairs, but it's, you know, more than furniture. In my opinion, it's ownership. Right. It's not just about being at the table, entering the room, but it's what we do with our influence, what we do with that seat when we get there. In my former life, when I did make it to the quote unquote table level of influence, leadership, I thought, well, I'm just happy to be here. Right. And so I didn't always use my influence, use my seat to fully secure it. Right. To really shape the room and add value. And so when I talk about securing the seat, it's what am I doing with the seat I have? And what am I doing to make sure that I'm adding more seats? And so I think there's a responsibility when you enter that room that many of us, you know, should really think about.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the seat. What seat are we talking about? Just make sure the audience is clear. When you say securing that seat, what seat are you referencing?
So for many people, a seat might be a leadership position. It might be the executive suite, or what many may say the C-suite, right? It may be a managerial role. So whenever you have an opportunity to climb up the proverbial ladder in the workforce and you get a certain level of influence, I think promotion, right? For me, it was the executive suite. And once you enter into that space, which we know that there's not many of us who are people of color that are in those roles. And so I do think there's an important conversation that has to be around when we do enter those rooms, when we do sit down in that seat of influence, what are we doing to make sure that we're not, we might be the first, but we're not the last. And are we using our voice to make sure that we're changing culture for the better?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to come back to something that you just said, using your voice. And there's another question I'm going to get to a little bit later in our discussion. So what inspired you? What made you say, I'm going to write this book called Securing a Seat at the Table? Tell us more about that.
Yeah, really, Toni Morrison said, write the book you want to read. And for so long, Phil, I was waiting on somebody to write a book to where I felt seen in the career narrative, meaning as a Black woman in the workplace, I was often reading career books, business books written by dominant culture, right? And so we use mm-hmm. those books, we use the information given, and we try to make it work for our situation, but you don't always see yourself in it, or you're an addendum or an asterisk to the information. And so I just started to get a little bit frustrated in terms of, you know, the concepts of leaning in and just work harder and all these sorts of things, and saying, well, it's a little bit different when you're the only and the one of few, right? And so I wanted to really dig into what intersectionality looks like for careers, so to speak. And so I wanted to be able to make sure that people saw themselves in the career narrative, because that's something that I didn't have. And so I'll also say that as a Black woman, experiencing the workplace is different than maybe what a white woman might experience, or even a white male, or even a Black man, or a Latinx man, right? And so I think that to give context, to give lived experience to careers, so that not only we can be affirmed, but then our managers, our leaders can also know how to show up for us by reading about our lived experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit more about that. Why is it, what do you believe are some of the underlying factors or reasons why someone, or shall we say certain groups, are not actually seen as part of the business?
Yeah, I think it's going back to your original question of the table, right? The table was the system, let's call it that. The
yes.
system, the table was not originally created for us to have a seat at that table, if we're being honest,
yes.
right? And so when we talk about equity and we talk about the table, it never had a seat for us to begin with. And so we have to dismantle that table and rebuild a new one. And as we're rebuilding a new one that's more equitable, I'm saying, okay, well, here's the experiences of Black and brown women, women of color, people of color, which differs from the traditional narratives that we've seen before. You think, for example, professionalism. We'll hear many of our colleagues say, well, this is professionalism, this isn't. And who made that? Who made those rules, right? You know, for example, when I was in corporate America for 15 years, professionalism was wearing your hair straight as a Black woman, right? You get to you get your seat if your hair is a certain way, but if people felt threatened because your hair was in braids or a natural hairstyle. And so I shied away from ever wearing those type of hairstyles. I didn't bring my authentic self to work because I was already shown what is deemed as appropriate and what's not, right? And so I wanted to also give light to that, to say, what would it look like if we see ourselves the way we need to instead of through the eyes of someone else, and talking about those nuances in the workplace?
So, Minda, to get there, you know, we see a lot of conflict, shall we say, and it's the norm. Well, you should accept me who I am. You should accept this, my loud voice. You should accept my quiet storm, you know, because I was deemed, and I have to be honest with you, for those that are quiet, you know, you're seen as, to your point, there are underlying factors also that transcends not just you know, your color, sometimes your communication styles come into play. I remember a young lady, and also your mindset of what is right and what is wrong. A young lady came into, and I'm just going to be frank, a young lady came into an area in the country, and I was teaching diversity and inclusion at the time, and she pulled me to the side, one of us, she pulled me to the side. She said, "Bill, you know, I got chastised. I got chastised because I had on a bright canary. What is it? Bright yellow canary, very tight fitting suit." And she said she was chastised by, and she was moving, fast tracking, you know, moving up in the business. She got pulled to the side by some other folk who said, you know, that's not appropriate, talking about straight hair. Now, what would you say to young ladies? And I often, and clap my hand if I'm wrong, Minda. I often say, you know, the old adage, to get in Rome, you have to get in Rome first. You got to get in the room. You're talking about securing the seat. You got to get in the room. Talk to our young people, and being a woman of color, our young ladies who are very flamboyant. Some of them are very eccentric and very, you know, very outspoken. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, in regards
to making sure you get there? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, I apologize. I think that what you're saying, you're not necessarily wrong, right, Phil? I think that there are two things can be true at the same time. We may want to bring our authentic self to work, and maybe that is loud and boisterous, what some might deem as that, or that might be introverted or what have you, right? And I think that we have to give people space to be who they need to be, but in the cultural context. So for example, prior to the pandemic, I was speaking at a lot of historically Black universities and colleges, and the one question that I would get from, you know, male and female students, they would say, you know, can I wear my hair the way I want to? Can I use my government name, or do I need to shorten it because of the resumes? And I found that really interesting that, in, you know, in 20, top of 2020, 2019, not how do I negotiate my salary? How do I
write
a resume? That they're asking about that authentic piece of themselves, right? And I told them, I said, listen, you have to think about the culture in which you're going into. Right. And so when you think about culture, if you're going into finance, you may not be able to show up in t-shirt and jeans. Right. That's not the culture. You may have to wear a suit and tie. And that's the way you get in the room. Right. And then eventually, once you're in the room, you could start to reshape that. Maybe there's casual Fridays right after you've gained influence and you've shown that you could do the work. And now you have a voice to leverage that. But I also think if you think you're going to be stifled by being in a suit and tie, or wearing your hair pressed out every single week, then find the spaces that celebrate you, not tolerate you. And so I do think it's important for us to know that we have options, right? We don't have to box ourselves in to these certain ideologies if they don't fit with us. And so I think we just have to remind ourselves that we do have choices.
Mm-hmm. That is a great segue to my next question, Minda. This is so awesome, I think. I think our audience is totally appreciating what your candor and your transparency. So from a woman's point of view, a woman of color's point of view, why should I care about securing a seat? Why is it, and really consider Bridget off of what we were just talking about, why should I adjust who I am for that moment to even get a securing a seat at the table? Why should I care?
You know, that's a great question. And really the seat, it starts in your mind first. I think oftentimes we have to also know that we've worked really hard to obtain certain seats or certain privileges or certain salaries. And so I think that, again, going back to choices, you may not want to be in an executive role. You might want to be an individual contributor, and that's securing the right seat for you. Right. And so I'm saying that what is the seat that you want? And when you do obtain it, what are you going to do with it? Right. And so, again, we all have a level of influence from the janitor to the CEO. We all have a seat that we hold. Right. And so what are we doing with it? And I think sometimes people of color in particular, some of us get into these spaces or into these rooms and then we become gatekeepers and then we don't open up the space for others, right? To have access and those sorts of things. And so I just want us to remember that securing our seat isn't just getting to our space and kicking up our feet and putting our hand behind our head and saying, I've made it. It's success is not a solo sport. And the more of us that make it, the more of us that make it into that room and have seats, I feel like that's where we have to move into to say, okay, maybe this table is not for me. I'm going to go build my own, right? I may want to build my own tables and chairs. That's what I did. I left corporate America and I built my own table.
Nothing wrong with it.
But I don't want us to be forced into entrepreneurship either. I want us to be able to navigate the workplace so that, again, we have choices to stay or leave or come back, whatever we want to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that men of color are seen any differently? We're talking about women, women of color. Do you believe that men of color are looked at any differently? And we know they have their fair share of challenges. Tell us your experience or what you've been exposed to as far as men of color securing the seat.
Yeah, you know, I think this is a good topic to bring up because I think that all of us could gain from being allies to each other, right? So as we think about women of color, men of color, Black and brown folks, I think if we see each other as assets instead of competitors, that we could all secure more seats together. And so I do think that, you know, Black and brown men, obviously, they don't have the equity that they should have inside of many spaces, but they do hold more seats when we look at statistics than, you know, women of color. And so I do think that, you know, our men of color, how can they start to say, where am I positioned in my organizations and how can I invest in those who aren't here, whose voice is missing? And so I think that sometimes we look at it, well, we're still not getting what we want. It's yes and, right? Bill, no, maybe you're not getting what some of those in the dominant culture, but you're actually more represented in leadership positions and on board roles and those sorts of things than Black and brown women are. So I think that there's room for growth, I think, in all areas.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this term racial acceleration? Is it possible? You know, racial acceleration, and I'm going to just leave a question at that, at that point. I'm interested in your thoughts. Racial acceleration, you have these boards, and let me be specific, you have these more clear, you have these boards out here that say, hey, we don't have enough diversity here. Let's get people in the room, you know. But is it possible, and are we going about it the right way?
So I do believe that we need to accelerate equity, right? I do believe that is important. And if we look around the current table and there's not the right amount of equity or diversity around the table, then we need to be intentional to make sure that we get the right set of people around the table, right? And so I do think that that's important, but we can't solve for equity if we're not willing to disrupt status quo. So I think that if we wait for the characters who are already at the table, leaders, to fix it, we've been waiting. So we know that they're not going to do anything different without an accelerated push, right? So I do think there has to be, like in California, there are states like that who are mandating certain, I think NASDAQ is also requiring certain board diversity. And so I do think that we have to have revolutionary processes and procedures in place so that we do get equitable practices. Because we see, Phil, when we leave it to everybody to do it on their own, we may be waiting and we may be in the end of life.
And that's a whole nother class all by itself. Yes, most definitely. Okay, share some ways people can find their voice and use it to speak up to secure. What's the proper way to go about this?
Well,
you know what? And can I add one other element to it? And I want you to think of it from a point of building relationships. One of our pillars is about building relationships. What's one of the ways that people can find their voice and use it to speak up in building relationships and securing that seat?
Yeah. So when we think again about the seat, you know, think about what role you want next. What, you know, maybe you're asking for a salary increase or you're going into a one-on-one and you need to advocate for yourself. These are all ways that we're showing up for ourselves, essentially. And so what this boils down to is self-advocacy. How am I using my voice? When I was in certain spaces, Phil, I used to tell myself, because I was the only Black woman in my working environments, I felt at times that I had to shrink my voice, right? Because people would dismiss what I had to say or tell me that I wasn't experiencing what I knew what I was experiencing. So I started to silence myself, and I used to tell myself that I didn't have a voice. But what I realized was we all have a voice. We just have to decide how we want to use it. And once I started to realize strategically, who do I need to use my voice with? How am I strategizing building relationships? And so I was under the assumption that if you work really hard and keep your head down, that everything works out for you, right? Someone will tap you on the shoulder and tell you how great you are and give you this promotion, give you the seat. And I realized that that's not always the case, a meritocracy, and that I had to articulate my value and quantify my worth with those who are already in those rooms that I'm not in, right? And so I looked around and I thought, okay, I need a squad, a board of directors inside my company. Who do I need to connect with? Who needs to know what I'm doing so that when an opportunity comes about, they think of me for it, right? But people can't think of you for things if they don't know what you're doing. And so I think we have to think about our branding inside the workplace. How are people perceiving our work when things come up? Do they see us as a leader? I used to have a manager early in my career who called me a utility player. He'd say, oh, we could just put Minda anywhere and she could do anything. And I thought, you know what? That's not what I want to be known for, that I can do anything. I actually want you to be thoughtful about what you're thinking about for my career. Don't just put me over off to the side and know I'm going to get it done, but actually think about me moving forward and upward, right? And so I had to redefine and create a rebranding of myself so that, no, he thought about me for specific projects, for specific, specific things. And I think that's important for us to think about, that our success is not a solo sport. It is tied to others. And so it's important for us to make sure that we put ourselves out there in the right ways to make sure people can support us in those ways.
Those are excellent points. When you think some of our previous conversations, you tapped into that. Mohammed Fushari talked about, hey, when you look at your own success, your own career, you create your own board of directors. And you own it, and you own it at that point. And there's a necessity for you to have that first starting here in the mind, as you stated. One of the other things that we're talking about when you're looking at mentoring or looking at that person that can be an advocate for you, when you get in those particular rooms, shall we say, it's not all about you. Sometimes it's also, what would you say to this, Minda? It's also what you can bring to the table for them and their organizations. What would you say to that?
Absolutely. I think we have to think about business. You are the CEO of you, right? Even if you're working for somebody else. So what is it that you need to show? Are your assets, are your strong points that people can tap into? When I'm thinking about when I used to work for someone else, I think, how can I be their wing woman? How can I be their wing man? Right? Like I'm thinking about, what is it that when they're up at night and they need something done or considered, do they think of me as the next person that's going to help them get it done? Right? I'm anticipating their needs. And so again, it's strategically thinking about our moves, right? No longer playing, you know, checkers, not even playing chess. We're moving to the Chinese game Go, right? We're thinking a couple steps ahead. Okay. And I think that people need to see that you add value. Right. It's not that, oh, I want more money. What have you been doing to add to the bottom line so that it makes sense? It makes everybody sense. Right. And so that articulation of our value is really important.
I have to check on that one. It doesn't just make my sense. It makes everybody's sense. Y'all get that audience, right? It makes everybody's sense. Excellent. All right. So one of my final questions in regards to securing the seat. Okay. What do you believe should be the number one thing you should do once you do secure the seat at the table? And with that, so that you stay there, and that what are some of the new responsibilities that comes with that role? Now, I didn't know this was coming. Oh my God, you know, so I didn't sign up for this. I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
That's the truth, right? Because you've worked so hard to get in the room, and then when you get there, that's when the real work starts, right? So I think understanding that we should always be evolving. I think sometimes we have to think about our skill set. Just because you made it to a certain space, are you still relevant? Are your skills still relevant? I know back in the day, Phil, on resumes, you put how many words per minute you typed on a resume, right? Like those things nobody cares about those skills anymore. You know, like that's not a flex, right? So when you get to the room, make sure that you're leveling up, make sure that your skills are relevant, that, you know, you're reading the latest management books, that you're, if you need public speaking classes, you're investing in a coach. You know, don't be afraid to continue to invest in yourself. Just because you reach a certain status, we should always be continuously learning and educating and advancing.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry, Mindy. You just said something that made me think of another question. So I'm going to ask. All right. So here we are in COVID-19, and we're in a pandemic, and everyone is still going back into office, but most are still virtual. There's been a shift in how corporate goes about getting things done. Does that change the philosophy on how you secure the seat at the table? What would you say to those just getting into the business? How do I deal with this? How do I manage this COVID-19 and, you know, virtual perspective?
Yeah, you know, I get that question a lot because I know things have changed, right? We don't have some of those organic water cooler moments that we all had before. People are seeing us and we can just ask, pop into somebody's office. But don't discount relationships and that people are still getting promoted and opportunities during the pandemic, right? So what is it that you need to do? Now you have a little more accessibility to folks than you had before. So sending them a message saying, hey, could I get 15 minutes of a virtual coffee? We still can do those things. Let's leverage that. If you're in a team meeting and you're used to having your camera off, what would it look like if you turned it on so that people could see your face, right? Maybe even you chime into the conversation so that people know you have a perspective, or use the chat, right? Don't just sit back and let everybody else chime in on certain points of the agenda. You use the chat and slide in there and just let people know that you have skin in the game. So I think the last thing I'll say, Phil, is we all are like on some type of video conferencing. So what would it look like if you showed up a couple minutes early, right? Because sometimes there's decision makers who are there waiting for the meeting to start and you get a little FaceTime. And so don't discount the environment that we're in. We still have to network even under new circumstances.
This has been phenomenal. Mindy, I have thoroughly enjoyed your insight, listening to you share your insights and your thoughts on your journey and your path. Final question that I have for you today, matter of fact, we have a couple of minutes remaining. Final thoughts on what you would like to leave with the audience, covering two things, you know, final thoughts that you might not have shared about securing the seat. And then what do you have coming down the pipeline that we should be aware of for Mindy Hart?
Yes. Thank you for having me, Phil. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. You made it so easy on me. I just want to remind people, we talked a little bit about it during our time together, Phil, but mindset. Right. I think sometimes we've been in environments where we might not have been supported. We might not have been advanced or, you know, missed opportunities, what have you. But you get to redefine where you are in your career. Maybe things didn't work out before, but you get to create a new blueprint. You get to unlearn things that may have been harmful to you in the past, and you get to chart a new course. And so just because maybe some things hadn't worked out in your career doesn't mean that they won't going forward, right? And so think about what the new blueprint has to be so that you can be successful in whatever you decide to do next. And lastly, know that you have options, right? And people can't help you if they don't know that you need support. So don't forget to use your voice. That's what it's there for. And then I have a new book that just came out a couple weeks ago called Right Within, How to Heal from Racial Trauma in the Workplace. So definitely I write with women of color at the center. But if you are a manager, a leader, or you've experienced being on the margins, these books are for you as well.
Mm-hmm. Get her book. Go out there. It's out there. Get it in virtual land. Download it. Go buy it. It's still, I think it might, you might find it in hardcover. Someone go find it. Look for Mindy Hart. It's one of our up and coming leaders in our culture. Mindy Hart, thank you so much. We appreciate you. You've been powerful. Audience, Network National audience, we see you at the next Real Career Talk session. Have a great day.